Hi, this is Jordan Moreno, and this is The Valley Now, your weekly feel-good hour where we lift each other up with the stories of good people doing good things in your neighborhood. Every week, we'll be talking with community leaders who have a unique passion for our thriving city and those that make The Valley such a special place to live. Get ready to be inspired by the work they're doing, whether it's mentoring our youth, providing a platform for those without one, or just driving those worthy charitable causes. Listen in on the conversations and join us in raising our community. This is our time to shine, and this is The Valley Now. JFCS is focused as a whole on behavioral health, healthcare, and social services for really anyone in our community, and does so through various programs and services like domestic violence initiatives, older adult services, help with substance abuse and counseling, mental health. But one of the programs making the biggest impact on our community and the future of our community is the Real World Job Development Program. They're training and working with teens who are aging out of foster care and kind of stuck wondering what's next. So my guest today is Linda Scott. She's the VP of Child and Family Solutions and a wealth of knowledge on the topic. So good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Jordan.
Yeah, let's start with an overview of how JFCS came to be.
Okay, so I'll keep that short because it's a 89-year history.
Right. Just the first question. No big deal.
Right. So Jewish Family and Children's Service has its beginnings in Phoenix in 1935. So that is really a very long time ago. And it was really a service arm. The Welfare Committee of the Phoenix Chapter of the National Council of Jewish Women was providing social services to needy Jewish families in 1935 in Arizona. And that evolved over time. It became a social service committee of the Jewish Community Council when it was founded here. It became a agency entity in 1944 and a 501c3 in 1955. And so it has evolved over time from, you know, very humble beginnings in the Jewish community, looking really to serve the Jewish community, to a good sized, large, you know, organization that is got multiple sites around the metropolitan area here, serving pretty much all of Maricopa County, regardless of age, faith, creed, race, anything. This is a whole community organization. And, you know, we operate, I think, as a whole out of the original values that were propelling the service and even from the early days. And so, those come out of the Jewish faith around valuing community, doing what is right, repairing wrongs in the world and acting kindly towards others. And so that's really where the organization works from in terms of its service to the community. We have a multitude of programs at Jewish Family and Children's Service. You hit briefly there on them. Our largest program division is our behavioral health and integrated care facilities that we have around the valley, providing a whole array of behavioral health and treatment for folks from infants, which sometimes people don't know there's such a thing as infant mental health, but there is.
Right. I know. I'm curious.
All the way through services for the for older adult populations and very specialized populations along the way. We have services in another program division specific to older adults and a set of programs specific to the Jewish community. And then we have our non-behavioral, all the rest of our programs, which are really my side of the house, which are our child welfare, domestic violence, prevention, workforce development kinds of things. Yeah,
that was pretty good condensing 80 whatever years into just a couple minutes. But tell us about the real world job development program and what that looks like.
Sure. The real world job development program, it's a long title. It's actually officially longer. It's the real world job development teens helping teens. And it was actually that title was selected by the first cohort of young people that we served in that program way back in 2007. This is a program that, like other programs at JFCS, was started because we were seeing a gap in the community array of services. So we have always, as an organization, considered ourselves to be partners with the Department of Child Safety. So whether it is specialized services for families involved with the Department of Child Safety, or whether it is prioritizing children and families who are involved in DCS in our behavioral health program, that population and that issue in our community has been something we have focused on for a very long time. So we had a lot of young people, primarily in our behavioral health program, who were in foster care, who were not getting adopted or returned to their families. Lots of them do. But there's this group that doesn't, and that they approach 18 and there is a withdrawal of supports for them. They can today voluntarily continue to be wards of the state and continue to receive some support for a couple of more years. If you think about kids developmentally, people turn 18 and they want to stand on their own 2 feet. And if the state hasn't felt like a great parent to them to begin with, they are keen to stay, right? Developmentally, their job is to say, I can do this on my own, right? But what we know nationally and locally from all the research that's been done repeatedly is that those youngsters that are aging out of the system without a permanent family placement, whether it's their biological family, adoption, or legal guardianship, are many times more likely than the average young person to end up homeless, drug addicted, in jail, or dead.
Which is so sad.
Within just a few years of their 18th birthday. So we were seeing those young people leave our behavioral health services. And then they would, a couple of years later or a year later or something, there would be a phone call because they would be in trouble. And they didn't have another adult they were connected to that they felt like they could trust or another phone number to call. So the real world job development program was really designed for those young people who were aging out of that system, of the foster care system, and who really needed ongoing support. And, you know, it is really a variety of things. If you come from a background of trauma that got you into a foster care system in the first place, which then includes more trauma if you are living in group homes and having to move frequently and things like that, and you don't have that consistent, caring, responsible adult with you through those important formative years, and you're changing schools a lot, there are things that get missed academically in terms of just basic academic skills,
right,
and social development, emotional development. What does a healthy relationship look like? You know, did they get chores and a rewarding allowance as a result, starting at the age of 11 or 12 all the way through, so they could learn something about responsibility and how far a dollar goes and how to have a bank, you know, that all of that stuff. And so what we're addressing with the real world program is all of those things. And so every youngster that comes to our program gets an assessment that includes a number of things. We're looking at their living skills capabilities. Where are their strong points? What are they really good at? What are their interests and aptitudes? We have some scales and some systems we use to look at like what might be a good career pathway for them. We look at academically, where are they? We might do some academic testing to see where they land. Are they in high school? Do they need to finish high school? Do we need to do a GED preparation and testing with them? online, credit recovery. What is it that they need to get that secondary education so that we can be looking with them about post-secondary education? How are you going to make your way in this world? And what's your chosen path? And let's look at what's necessary to get to that, because none of it happens by magic.
Right.
And then how can we support them along the way? We have a, you know, it's not unusual at JFCS and in this program to hear one of us talking about, well, whatever it takes. So if we don't have it, we're going to go find it, whatever it is, right? to break down those barriers and try to provide the support and the clear path for young people to be successful in work and in school. So job training, post-secondary education, preparation for those things. We do a lot of teaching and just groups around, you know, how do you talk to an employer? What do you do if you're not getting along with a coworker? Why do you have to go to work in the morning if your boyfriend broke up with you last night?
Yes. And that's something that you wouldn't even think of. You know, it's just one of these individual scenarios that I'm sure you see a lot more than I, you know, would ever think of. But it's something that needs to be taught. And it must feel kind of good that you are the trusted adults, that you are the ones that they go to for that training. But do you also find that sometimes those barriers are, you know, those walls are up and that is a barrier and that not all the time they want to let their guard down? Is that kind of a difficult situation?
It is not at all uncommon for us to immediately recognize that somebody's going to have a really hard time trusting, right? Mm-hmm. There's been lots of experiences sometimes in these young people's lives where their experience has been, I'm not going to get attached and I'm not going to trust because look what has happened before.
Right.
So our, you know, our approach to that, the program is really founded on youth development principles and increasing protective factors that are known in research for a number of years now. And so what we really try to do is have the team at the program become the representation of that caring, consistent, but going to hold you accountable adult, right? You're not going to get kicked out because you had a bad day. We're not going to kick you out because we needed to ask you to leave today. In fact, I don't think we have ever asked a kid to leave the program on a given day because they weren't able to handle it or they were too angry or something without saying to them, please come back tomorrow. We just want you to go cool off today. Mm-hmm. You're always welcome.
It's important.
So because one of the things that sometimes young people in their situation learn is it's a test. If I act out, you kick me out, then you just prove to me that, yep, you weren't trustworthy either.
Right? I wouldn't even think about that.
Yeah. So and we've been able to expand also in the last few years so that we do not have to be serving exclusively young people in the foster care system. There's a term out there about opportunity youth or disconnected youth. And so young people who are disconnected from school and work and they're not 18 or they're under 21, though we can assist in this program now, even if they weren't in foster care.
Okay. And that's something new. I was telling you off air that I have been down and toured the facility before. So I don't think you guys were doing that when I was there. And that was just a couple months ago. So that's exciting. And that's a whole new population.
Yeah. And I would say that probably the majority of the youth we're serving still are that current or former foster youth, but it is not something that absolutely has to be anymore. And we are branching out into some other outreach activities, because there's an awful lot of young people in this city that could use the assistance. I mean, you know, if you can't finish your high school level education, the opportunities are very limited.
And you are serving up to 24 within this program. Can you speak to just because like the lack of programming for that demographic of that 16 to 24, 18 to 24? And I think a lot of programs just assume you turn 18 and you're an adult, but nothing changes overnight, you know, and if someone especially is delayed, whether behaviorally or mentally or right. not understanding finances, yeah, a 24-year-old yeah. might be acting more like a 14-year-old.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we're striving for, so everybody, you know, is getting academic goals, if that's, you know, most of them are getting academic goals, but also vocational goals, career path goals. And so if we stopped working with people at 18, we wouldn't be really being able to support, encourage, find, clear the path for that post-secondary education, whether it's academic or it's trade, right? Mm-hmm. What is it that you want to do? That we have to go past 18 really to shepherd that development, right? Because when do you really start your career? When do you start the path in work life? Sometimes, I mean, I had a job at 13, but I was delivering papers. I wasn't going to do that for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's not you sitting in the chair now. That's a whole different person.
Right. Right. So yes, we are able to serve through the age of 24.
And how are teens enrolling in the program, or how are you relying on partnerships for that to bring in the teens?
Yes, we get a lot from, you know, other agencies and partnerships. But there's a lot of word of mouth also, I think. And then every once in a while, I know I was working out of that office several days the last couple of weeks, and because the program director was on vacation, and you know, we had some intakes happen where, you know, somebody's like grandmother brought them in, and I don't know where she found out, whether it was word of mouth or Googling or mm-hmm. what it was, but we do get the word out as much as we can. And from a business standpoint, it's a nice thing to be able to say, but from the point of view of wanting to make this problem go away in the community, it's not a great thing to be right. Saying. We don't ever have a lack of requests for service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that it's such a complex issue too, that I feel like there will always be a need. Have you seen yeah. the needs changing though, the needs of these young people?
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, we started this in 2007, I think it was. And one of the things, so the things that have been consistent and that we knew were going to be there right from the beginning and that are still there are young people who are surprisingly far behind in their academic learning. Young people who are really not well developed in terms of how to have healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. Of a variety of kinds, right?
Right, even friendships and parent-child relationships.
Expectations of other humans and what can be expected of them, you know, that has their, most of the young people we're serving, their experience with relationships has not been the norm for the rest of us, right? So that we knew, and that's been consistent. You know, transportation has always been an issue. Mm-hmm. Housing has always been an issue that has gotten worse and worse and worse. And currently that is just an enormous problem. And you have to make a pretty good chunk of change to go mm-hmm. get yourself a place to live without a bunch of roommates.
Yeah.
And so that is that that's an issue. The other thing that has become a issue far more than it ever used to be is the fear amongst the group that we're serving about gun violence.
Mm.
Because now they see it.
Right.
It happens to their friend. It happens in the group home they're living in.
Scary.
It happens, you know, they see their friends carrying weapons. So there is a greater level of fear in the population we're serving around their own safety just on the street.
That's interesting. And in group homes, so that's their safety yes. going to sleep at night, period.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'm not saying that there's a whole bunch of that happening in group homes, but in the last 2-3 years, we've had 2 incidents in Maricopa County, and mm-hmm. That is enough to be very frightening.
Right. A big shift, definitely a big shift. And I think just in our community in general, a big shift.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Yeah.
Well, I think the young people we're serving, it feels like it's much more in their face than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
So that's a bigger, scarier problem. But, mm-hmm. but you know, sort of the giant looming elephant in the room all the time is housing.
Right. Which is, I think, do you know, do you have any of those stats? You're probably much more up to date than I am. Because I remember it would have been about 4 or 5 years ago when I was working a lot with the homeless population. It was that you had to have been making at least $22 an hour to afford a one bedroom apartment. Yeah. And I'm sure, and that was pre-COVID, that was pre this whole housing craziness. Do you know what that is now, or where they should be kind of aiming for?
So I don't know for sure. I know that about a year ago, I was looking at it, and what I was finding was saying that people really, in order to afford a one bedroom in what would be considered a safe neighborhood,
mm-hmm. That's a whole other issue.
That they were needing to make around $50,000. And so what's that? That's
well above minimum wage, that's for sure.
Now we're getting to $24 an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. Yep. So it's, you know, and that could have gone up since then too.
Right.
I don't know what the exact number is. I know that it is, continuously rising.
So how do you help to navigate and help the young people navigate through that? Because that's daunting. Do you have partnerships that you're able to connect them with, or just kind of setting them up with a job that is has upward trajectory?
Yeah, both of those things. So we do have relationships with organizations in town that do some transitional housing for this population. And of course, there's not enough of it.
Nope, never. Never.
Yeah, we do see kids getting roommates, multiple roommates, which sometimes works out. Sometimes we're helping troubleshoot the issues that arise. Mm-hmm. Right? I think the biggest key to getting to that place where somebody can be safely self-sufficient is their career path and what the plan is for what is needed, what training is needed, what education is needed. Do you know what the labor market looks like? Do you know what's in demand and what's not in demand? And do you know how much those people are making to start? And that's something we look at with people all the time. Where do you want to get to? You know, what are your interests? Let's go see what that looks like and what kind of education you need to get there. And what the wage is and what the growth opportunity is in that career path. A lot of times young people will say, oh, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. I'm going to work for myself.
Well, maybe not right away.
Yeah. Hey, some people have a real knack for it. You know, we're going to support you if that's really where your aptitude is. And there are some partners we can work with to help promote that. But what does that mean to you as a young person saying that to yeah. us, right? What does that mean? What are you going to do? What is it that you're going to sell? Mm-hmm, you know, right. What skill yeah. is it that is going to be something that you can use that, turn that entrepreneurial skill set onto to make yourself a living, right? Okay, so now if you can articulate what that skill is, can you do that now? Do you right. have the credentials to sell that to somebody, or do you need to look at some occupational training with us? Do we need to find you a certificate program in whatever it is? Do you need to go to, do you need to apprentice to somebody? You want to start your own plumbing business? That's awesome. But as a homeowner, I'm not going to hire you unless I know that you're a well-trained plumber. So correct. Do you yeah. want an apprentice program? Do you, you know, and then let's hook you up with teaching about how to run your own business. Like, what do you need to know accounting wise? What do you need to know about banks and credit? And, you know, great. You want to be an entrepreneur? These are all the things it takes.
Yes, it takes a lot to run a business. I was just telling you I own my own business, and me and taxes right now, I'm like, oh man, there's so much that goes into it. And so, yeah. you know, these young people are really lucky to have you to help have that one-on-one guidance, because each person's mm-hmm. path is going to be different. Yeah. And so you really are very specialized, and I'm sure your team is incredibly trained too.
They are, and they're passionate. And I have to say that one of the reasons that this program is such a point of pride for me and for this organization is because our program director, she has such passion, compassion, and true understanding about the youth that are being served. She gets it. She gets them. And she can pass that on to staff that she hires, that she's got absolutely what it takes to do that job.
And what brought you to this job? Why the passion for this population?
My evolution at Jewish Family and Children's Service was sort of went in through a bunch of different paths. But along the way, what became very clear to me was that kids, removal from family and sort of floating around out there was something that just touched me deeply. Domestic violence does the same thing to me. There's something about a level of victimization and trauma that somebody could not avoid, like by no fault of their own. And when it is a young person like that, when it's coming from the people and systems that are supposed to be protecting them, that just feels like one of those places to me personally where you just got to do the best you can to help mitigate that, because that's what those values are all about, right? What, righting wrongs, doing what's right, valuing community, and being kind. And so that's for whatever reason, those are the groups that just really speak to my heart and sort of draw the empathy.
And they're, I mean, even if you're not intentionally also instilling those values in the folks that come through the program, they're leaving understanding a lot more about kind of that under the surface level of what does kindness look like? What does doing better in the world look like? And, even if you guys aren't teaching that, you're not sitting down having a class with that, they're leaving with that understanding. And that's super powerful, even just in confidence and the way that someone carries themselves can make all the difference too, even in a job interview.
Absolutely. And when you said, leaving with confidence, one of the things that I think is most encouraging and most instilling of the idea that maybe I can do this is when we're able to have young people we served in the past come talk to the young people in the program now.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, that is very impactful, just in terms of lifting the fear. Like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I've got what it takes. I don't know if, here's somebody who was in your situation and look where they are now. So,
and even those that are kind of the mentor coming back in and showing everyone else this is what you can do, they aren't that far removed. So they're still working on themselves. They're still working on building their own confidence. And that in itself is just lifting everyone. And I love that. I love to hear that and I love to see that. Well, what's on the horizon for you and how can the community get involved and help you in what's next for the organization?
We always can take donations and we can, and people can get on our website and do that. That is always a helpful thing because it means we can use it where it's needed. Mm-hmm. In terms of for the real world program, we're always looking to be able to expand our reach in various ways and places. And so we're always looking for new partnerships. We're working on one right now. Hopefully we'll be into some arrangements with high schools. We'll see. And so we also take donations of clothing, gently used.
The nice stuff. I'll say it. The
nice stuff. Stuff kids can wear to a job interview today. So it's not necessarily a suit, but, khakis and a button-down shirt. Or a, below knee length skirt and a professional looking blouse. Those kinds of things. Hygiene products we take also, absolutely. And how that happens also is available on our website, on the section for the Real World Job Development Program. And our agency website is just jfcsaz.com. org.
Linda, thank you so much. And thank you for the work in the community. You're changing the future.
I was trying. Thank you so much, Jordan. It's been a pleasure.
All right. I want to give a very special thank you to my guests today. And I want to thank you for being a part of the program and making our community an amazing place, not just to live and to work, but most importantly, to play. You can hear The Valley Now on the radio with audio on demand on radio station websites and the Odyssey app. My name is Jordan Moreno. Shine your light, share your love, and join us again next week right here on The Valley Now.